This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
8:36, Thursday, December the 30th. And of course, you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning, together with Philip C. But in the meantime, we're turning our attention to the state of our pension fund, or otherwise known as EPF. So according to UMNO Youth Chief, Datuk Dr. Ashraf Wajdi Dusuki, the public, apparently, especially those hit by the floods, are asking the government to allow for another round of 10,000 ringgit withdrawals under the iTeacher scheme from the EPF. He said this is because the one-off cash aid provided by the government to flood victims was insufficient.
However, Prime Minister Datuk Sri Ismail Sabri Yaakob has said that the government has no intention at the moment to allow such EPF withdrawals. Should the flood victims be allowed to access the EPF? I think that is the real question here, despite the massive withdrawals we've seen throughout the past year due to the pandemic. And what are the other ways then can the government help the flood victims if they are not able to access the EPF?
So, to help us come up with some answers to this complex question, we have on the line with us Carmelo Felito, CEO for the Centre for Market Education, otherwise known as CME. Good morning, Carmelo. Now, the Prime Minister, he has said no plans to allow the flood victims to withdraw from the EPF at the moment. But I'm just curious, and this is a hypothetical question, what precedent would that set in motion if this were allowed to happen?
Good morning, and thanks for having me. Well, I think that we risk to fall into the famous way to say that there is nothing more permanent than a temporary government program. So the EPF withdrawal was introduced 1.5 years ago to face the problems created with movement restrictions. And I've been in favor, actually, at the beginning, but I was not in favor of keeping on reiterating it, because indeed the risk that we can fall in is that whenever there is something out of the ordinary, we give possibility to the people to compromise their long-term financial stability.
So, you know, I think the question here is then, you know, what can the government then do to assist those really impacted by the floods? We've seen the proposed cash payouts, the 1,000, 10,000 if you're deceased and such. What are the options then can the government explore to help those affected by the floods then?
Well, I think that the first point should be also to open, again, a wider reflection on our social safety net. So we should take this situation, this occasion to implement, to think about at least about greater reforms, both on the social safety net and also on maintenance and our infrastructure. This is for the long run. For the short run, of course, where the people are more concerned, I think that we should look eventually into using some of the resources created with the windfall tax and also some of the funds that have been eventually allocated for the COVID-19 emergency, as we are coming out to know that probably Omicron is not as dangerous as the previous variants. So maybe we can think about a shift of funds. I would also try to be creative in terms of special loans, special terms for loans for reconstruction. And why not also deploying the resources that the government has in terms of human resources to help the people? And I have in mind the army, but also something that in certain European countries is called social works, and allow, in example, prisoners, a certain category of prisoners in jail, to work and to help the people for the reconstruction.
Okay, and Carmelo, I want to know about your views on this EPF withdrawals, because so far 101 billion ringgit has been taken out due from the various withdrawal schemes throughout the pandemic. What kind of impact, actually, if we look at it, will it have both from an economic and social perspective?
From the social perspective, saving is the best way of creating an intergenerational alliance or pact. We save because we want to create resources for our children and grandchildren. So this is creating hope, opportunities for future generations. So in a way, we can compromise this intergenerational pact. On the other side, on the most strictly economic side, we know that most of the people have very little money left in the EPF. So their future financial stability is already at risk or compromised, and we risk to compromise it even further. Malaysia is a country in which households are very much present-oriented in terms of their preferences, in their consumption preferences, while we need the process of education, but also of creating the right financial infrastructure to help them saving more, not saving less.
Yeah, so what are some of the ways to actually encourage them rebuild their savings then, from a very practical perspective? Should we make EPF contributions compulsory for all types of workers, including, let's say, gig workers, for example? Or should we raise the level of employee contribution? What are the things we can do?
I would think about both these measures, probably not making EPF compulsory, but some form of retirement scheme compulsory that can be not necessarily the EPF, but can be a private fund. So I would move in the direction of making retirement schemes compulsory for everybody, and discussing also the possibility for employers to increase their contribution to these funds when contracts are discussed. These are absolutely, but of course, this also requires an increase in the wages. So we need to look at that situations, that reforms that can spur economic growth and then allow growth in wages and salaries, because if there are no resources to be saved, then it's useless to talk about saving.
Yeah, I think which leads to the next question about, you know, the economic growth required, right? What's your assessment of 2022 in terms of economic growth and also the quality of the growth here, whether it does contribute to wage increases?
I think that we have two big elements of uncertainty in front of us. One is the way in which the government will react to Omicron. So if we are going to overreact or to handle into the direction of handling the virus as endemic. The other one is inflation. And with regard to inflation, we need, unfortunately, a serious program of government spending cuts. But budget 2022 goes in the opposite direction. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that the percentage of government spending is the highest one in terms of growth looking at the future of the GDP. Mm. For the future, I would not look too much into the magnitude of growth, but indeed at the quality. And where we are, I think, a little bit behind is the role of private investment in generating growth for the country. And this is due, of course, also and in particular to the climate of uncertainty. So it is very important, rather than specific measures per se, that the government launch a signal of going back to normality, a signal for certainty of the economic horizon. And under this perspective, I think we need to push a little bit faster, in example, on the reopening of international borders. One thing, I would look at fiscal reform, where corporate income and personal income taxes are cut, but GST is reintroduced. Mm-hmm. And I think it's time also to reflect on our packages for foreign investment and in general to the immigration laws.
All right. Thank you very much for your time. That was Carmelo Felitto, CEO of the Center for Market Education, otherwise known as CME, giving some suggestions in terms of how to spur economic growth for 2022. And you're right, Philip. It's not just economic growth in general, but quality, so that we can get these higher paying productive jobs, because that's the root, in a way, of the problem that we are facing when it comes to EPF. Many Malaysians just don't make enough money to begin saving in the first place.
Yeah, I think it's about, you know, good quality job creation that comes through. And I think Carlito does pass out clearly two choices here. What we have done is we have essentially decided to basically spend our way to drive economic growth. Mm. But the question is, are you going to drive economic investment, private investment, both foreign and domestic? We have done some good job, I think. We did attract some foreign investment, like the likes of Intel and such, right? But really the question is it going to build an ecosystem of these
local
kind of
companies?
Companies are also going to drive and further invest in this country.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's also question marks about our competitive edge. And you're right, private investment is critical to economic growth. And in the last few years, that has not been a positive figure.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.